Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, November 12th, 2024. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Four University of Idaho professors discuss election results. Latah County goes for a Republican presidential candidate for the first time since 2004. Number of Democrats likely to increase in Washington legislature. And Dan Newhouse has won the 4th Congressional District in Washington, running in his election against another Republican. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Four Idaho women have filed a lawsuit against the state in district court in Boise seeking clarification of Idaho's extremely narrow medical exemptions for those seeking abortion care. In Idaho, emergency doctors face up to 5 years in prison for treating women with pregnancy complications if the woman's case is severe enough that her health is in danger, but is not severe enough that the woman's life is in danger. A case based on that Idaho law has been to the U.S. Supreme Court, who in June punted it back to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, in state court before Ada County Judge Jason Scott today, Rebecca Vinson Brown testified she had to go out of state for abortion care even though her fetus had multiple structural defects, including a dangling choroid plexus in the brain, a heart rotated on its axis, a horseshoe kidney, no detectable bladder or diaphragm, a displaced stomach, and missing digits on the right hand. Vincent Brown is one of four plaintiffs in the case. She told Judge Scott her pregnancy ended in the bathroom of her Portland hotel room while her toddler was in the next room. Vincent Brown said, "If it was in Idaho, I would have been able to get into the car first thing when I first started contracting, drove down to the hospital, been with the doctors whom I trusted, been in an environment that I knew it would have been covered by health care that I had, and I wouldn't have been giving birth while my 2-year-old daughter was on the other side of the wall." The Center for Reproductive Rights filed the lawsuit on behalf of the four women, called Atkins versus the State of Idaho, in September of last year. Center for Reproductive Rights attorney Gail Deddy said the case has broad implications because hundreds of Idahoans have been forced to travel out of state for abortion care. Idaho Attorney General's Office Division Chief Jim Craig argued unborn children, which is what he calls fetuses and embryos, have a fundamental right to life. Craig said during his opening statement, "The evidence will show that every successful abortion results in the death of an unborn child. Idaho has the right to protect those lives." Referring to the plaintiffs, Craig said they are relying on hypotheticals and speculation on what might happen to people. Donald Trump winning 52% of the vote in Latah County could be a sign of a shift in population, or it could be Democrats were just not showing up at the polls this time. This year was the first time a Republican presidential candidate has won Latah County since 2004, when George W. Bush won re-election over John Kerry, with Bush winning Latah County by just 256 votes. In both 2020 and 2024, the Democratic presidential candidates won in Latah County over Trump with a bit of a cushion. Biden won the county by 764 votes in 2020, and Hillary Clinton won the county by 774 votes in 2016. By the way, Bush also won in Latah County in 2000 over Al Gore with a whopping 2/3 of the county vote. That was the year Ralph Nader got 999 votes in Latah County, all of which illustrates how wildly Latah County voting can fluctuate between presidential terms. Latah County lost its Democratic seat in the legislature in 2022 when redistricting caused all of Lewis County and Latah counties, plus a sizable portion of rural Nez Perce County, to join as District 6. Since then, legislative seats from the district have been all Republican. An indication of a more long-term change in the county electorate is found in the down-ballot races for county commissioner this year. Currently, the county commission is made up of three Democrats, John Bowman, Kathy LaFortune, and Tom Lamar. When new county commissioners are sworn in at the new year, Bowman will no longer be a commissioner. He lost his seat to Republican Jason Stooks, who is mostly a political unknown, who ran for Moscow City Council in 2021 but did not seem to present much of a campaign that year. Kathy LaFortune decided not to run again for her commission seat, leaving the seat open for Republican Tony Johnson to win over Democratic candidate Mark Thorne. This will be a disappointment for those who hope to fight back against the county's housing crisis, as the two candidates most responsible for the idea of creating a housing authority to deal with the crisis situation were the Democrats running in the races, Bowman and Thorne. At a candidates forum, Tony Johnson said he had read part of an article in Forbes which said billionaires such as Bill Gates or Elon Musk might give money for local housing projects. Come January, the only Democrat on the county commission will be Tom Lamar, whose seat is not up for election until 2026. University of Idaho professors who specialize in politics and history say moderate Democrats and youth did not show up in this year's elections, resulting in the nation's lurch to the extreme right. About 120 people showed up for a standing room only rundown on the election from three University of Idaho political science professors and one history professor during a Malcolm Renfrew interdisciplinary colloquium at the UI library today. One of the takeaways was the youth vote did not show up nationally, and those youth that did swung more towards the right, as political science professor Marky McBrayer spoke about.
Tufts does a youth survey with every general election, both midterms and primaries. That's probably the most high-quality one, Pavel. Yeah. And that one is also showing a bit of a shift to the right. That being said, and I think Pavel sort of already touched on some of this, this really breaks out pretty different along gender lines. So if you look at young men, and this is age category 18 to 29, they tended to break for Trump, right? Whereas women, young women, tended to break for Kamala. And even if you divide that further down, young black men, 20 percentage points higher for Trump this year than in 2020. I think Latino men is something like 13 percentage points higher than what it was in 2020. So you are seeing young men, especially, which we've already discussed a little bit, moving to the right. And this is true across racial and ethnic groups.
On the issue of young men leaning to the right, history professor Rebecca Schofield said there are echoes to the rise of the Nazis. Here's Schofield, followed by some comments on the subject by political science professor Michael Overton.
I do think it's important to look at media. There's a lot of really great historical work out there on how the radio became was used instrumentally by fascists in the 1920s and 30s as the sort of way in which these new technologies take people who were once isolated, bring them together, and then give them a massive platform. And so what we see is often when we have these big technological leaps, extreme viewpoints become more mainstreamed because there is simply a new platform to be using it. And I think this sort of rise of male influencers and this sort of like neo-masculinity, you know, the incel movement, we know about all of these sort of markers that speak to young men. And I think, too, Democrats don't always do a great job speaking to young men of, like, if you want to come out of college and have a good job and buy a house, nobody is talking to you. And I think that there are some right-wing influencers who really are and who sort of hit on those touchstones of, like, being able to be proud of yourself and and those sorts of things. I think there's a real vacuum around masculinity on the left right now.
When your echo chamber is telling you are wrong for being, like, young, male, and white, you're going to reject those voices that you believe are saying that. Whether we think that's a fair characterization of what's going on doesn't matter. That's the message that's being received. And if that's the message being received, how do you expect to make friends with someone like that? I mean, not exactly the easiest thing to do. I think that if we're talking practical measures, if you're like putting out a counter masculinity, and when I say that, I mean something that hasn't been co-opted yet with words like woke, but something that's a positive, non-toxic masculinity that can be used as an example to show that you can still be a dude, you can still be a white guy and be a positive force in this progressive world. Tim Walz was a great example of that. Like, you can do things like hunt. You can be a football coach. You can be a champion for people. You can show strength and protect people who might not have the same kind of rights and privileges you do, right? What we're looking for, I guess, is less, more Ted Lassos and more Aragons from Lord of the Rings.
Thank you. As if you had qualified.
Well, I mean, I saw some people react and not everyone react. And showing that there's this counterexample, you can clearly be a white guy and not be, so some of this has to be messaging that, yeah, you're a young white man, that doesn't make you a problem, is part of it, right? Getting through that echo chamber to make sure that's made is important.
That was UI political science professor Michael Overton, preceded by history professor Rebecca Schofield. Professor Schofield also spoke about the vote in Latah County, where Trump this year became the first Republican presidential candidate to take the county since George W. Bush in 2004. She spoke about how incumbent Republican Senator Dan Foreman was seen as too extreme even by some Trump voters in Latah County, whereas incumbent Republican Representative Brandon Mitchell does not seem to have that image problem.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Julia Parker actually beat Dan Foreman in Latah County by 1,600 votes. So if you think about that, there were people in Latah County who said Dan Foreman is too extreme, but Donald Trump is not, is really interesting. And then Kathy Dawes lost Latah County to Brandon Mitchell. And so certainly, at least in our county, not in the broader district, there was a sense that this is a candidate too far on the fringe, but it was not by enough votes that could hold up against the other counties in our district.
That was University of Idaho history professor Rebecca Schofield speaking at a Renfrew colloquium session at the UI today. It should be noted that Representative Mitchell votes the same way in the legislature as Senator Foreman, which is to say with the extreme right that has taken over the Idaho Republican Party. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox assisted with this story.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by the Moscow Food Co-op, specializing in food, goods, and programs that nourish and nurture our community. The Moscow Food Co-op is located at 121 East 5th Street. For more information, visit moscowfood.coop, call 882-8537, or find them on Facebook. KRFP is also sponsored by
Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tiedye-everything.com.
Democrats' margin is likely to grow in the Washington legislature, although a number of legislative races in Washington are too close to call. Democrats outnumber Republicans in the state Senate 29-20, and so far Democrats have held on to that 9-seat advantage and may pick up another one or two seats. The Democrats' advantage in the House is now 58-40, and the Spokesman Review reports current election results show they are likely to pick up another seat to make their advantage 59-39. Senate Democrats yesterday voted for Jamie Peterson of Seattle to take over as majority leader. Peterson, who has been in the Senate for 11 years, will fill the post after Majority Leader Andy Billig of Spokane opted not to run for re-election.
Incarcerated young people in Washington state can spend a longer time in detention if they don't have a place to go upon release. Some of the reasons for longer stays for people under the age of 18 include youth who are experiencing homelessness or are in between homeless shelters. Sarah Zier is with Team Child, a Washington state-based advocacy group for youth involved with the juvenile justice system. She says overstaying in detention is devastating for the youth who experience it.
They're facing layers of challenges. Not only do they not have a safe place to sleep or to go home to or a family and supportive adults to meet their needs, but then they're held in detention where they're isolated and they don't have a chance of those things either.
Zier says many barriers exist to ensuring young people have a place to go when they're released. She notes that people don't have a right to determine where they reside until they're 18 years old. A U.S. Supreme Court decision earlier this year allows cities to pass laws punishing people experiencing homelessness, which could exacerbate the situation for young people in Washington. DeGale Cooper is head of Youth Care, an organization working to end youth homelessness in King County. She says Black, Indigenous, and people of color disproportionately experience homelessness in the county. Cooper says the city of Seattle and the state have policies in place to end youth homelessness, but funding remains an issue.
Young people are homeless all over our state, and if we don't have the financial resources to support organizations that can house these young people for either short periods of time or long periods of time, then the policy can't work.
State lawmakers passed a measure that went into effect in 2021 stating that any unaccompanied youth discharged from a public-funded system of care will be discharged into safe and stable housing. However, the state has yet to achieve this. Zier says it's important to solve the issue of unaccompanied youth held in detention, even though it's a small number of people population-wise.
From an equity perspective, it's really important that our state stick to commitments we've made to house young people and also to give young people who are detained for offenses opportunities to engage in treatment instead of being held in detention where their needs aren't met.
Team Child offers some recommendations for addressing the issue of youth who are stuck in detention. It says the state should allow faster access to court for young people in detention and adjust the legal emancipation and minor guardianships to better serve people under age 18. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Dan Newhouse of Washington's 4th Congressional District has won re-election against another Republican, Jared Sessler. The race in the Central Washington District was tight, with Newhouse leading with 51.7% of the vote. The Republican Dan Newhouse is one of two remaining Republicans in the U.S. House to vote to impeach Trump in 2021. Of the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach, 8 either lost re-election campaigns in 2022 after being targeted by Trump or decided not to run for re-election. Because of that, Donald Trump backed Sessler and targeted Newhouse, saying in April on his social media platform Truth Social, Sessler, quote, is running against a weak and pathetic Republican in name only named Newhouse, who voted to, for no reason, impeach me. There was a reason to vote to impeach Trump, which was Trump incited a violent insurrection aimed at overturning democracy, which ended up injuring 140 police officers and resulted in at least 5 deaths in January 2021. Sessler said during this year's campaign, devout Muslims should not serve in Congress. Jared Sessler's right-wing view reappeared in an interview late in the election cycle with the Yakima Herald Republic. Sessler said Muslims cannot uphold the oath of office because, quote, their fundamental belief system is anti-American. He made similar public statements during the primary. Engineering firm Welch Comer has told Pullman City officials Main Street will open to limited vehicular traffic on Thursday. The announcement comes after two delays in completing the $12 million project's goals of opening Main Street by October 15th and yesterday, November 11th. Crews from Apollo Incorporated are painting stripes on the pavement and installing traffic lights. Welch Comer says they expect to finish all work on the downtown revitalization project by Friday, November 22nd. The Pullman City Council will hold a public hearing tonight on the mayor's proposed 2025 to 2026 biennial budget. The council will also vote on an ordinance fixing the city's levy amount for 2024 and will vote on an ordinance fixing the emergency medical services tax levy for 2024. The council will also hold a discussion at tonight's meeting on whether sidewalk permit fees should be instituted with a one-time $25 application fee followed by a $125 inspection fee and $30 annual renewal fees. The Pullman City Council will meet at 7 p.m. tonight at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. There is a 30% chance of rain tonight, mainly after 4 a.m. Snow level 4,400 feet, increasing clouds, low 36. South winds 5 to 10, becoming southeast in the evening, gusts up to 20. 90% chance of rain tomorrow. Snow level 4,800 feet, high 43. Southeast winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. Between a quarter and a half inch of rain possible. Wednesday night, 100% chance of rain, snow level 4,900 feet, steady temperature around 41, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. And on Thursday, 60% chance of rain, mainly before 10 a.m., snow level 4,500 feet, mostly cloudy, high 47. Current temperature is 37. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assists with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online. We have an episode of Noise Filter coming up, Flashpoints in the 6:30 to 7:30 slot, then live in the studio, Rude Awakening, 7:30 to 9:30. Brent Bentz on to play music for you at 9:30. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored in part by Hunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Hunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
KRFP supports progressive values, including multiculturalism and environmentalism.